Welcome to the Admin Admin Podcast, a podcast for people working in the real world of IT. If you're a sysadmin working on a help desk, you're a network engineer, an IT consultant, or a computer techie who wants to know more about servers, or even if you want to get a job in the IT field, this podcast is for you. Hi, I'm Al.
And I'm Andy.
And I'm Jerry.
Yay.
And this is episode, where are we up to now?
14.
14, God. And it's nearly Christmas, so this is our Christmas edition.
Happy Christmas.
Yay. So, what have people been up to then?
Well, just going on from last week. Now, the hard drive backup that we were talking about last week, then we had that issue with the formatting of it.
Yes.
Well, as you suggested, I brought that drive back home with me. I plugged it into a Windows box. I was going to boot it up into a Linux one, but I just plugged it in when Windows was on and immediately said, do you want to format this drive? Of course, that's what we were having the problems with, wasn't it? So we so we said yes, and it formatted it. And all the problems that we were having on the server, where it wouldn't format, as soon as it brought it home, it formatted straight away. So I thought, well, that was nice and easy. And I thought that had cured the problem. But when I took it back, plugged it back into the server again. So I plugged it back in the server, went to my computer. It still had a drive letter. And so I thought, well, that's it. That's great. So then I went to an SBS where you've got the backup wizard that you can set it up from. Started to go through that wizard. And a couple of steps in, it said it had to format the drive in order to continue. All the data would be lost. Well, that was fine because it was empty anyway. So clicked OK, and then 30 seconds later or so, it came back and said there was an error, could not continue with the backup. I actually tried it again just in case, but it did exactly the same thing. And when I went back into my computer again on the server, the drive letter was lost, and it had gone back to the raw format that we had the problem with initially. So at this point, I'm a little bit stuck, really, because we can't format it in the server because it keeps coming up as a raw format, no drive letter. You can format it in a regular PC, no problem, but as soon as you plug it back into the server again and go to do the backup, then it loses that format. So that's where I'm up to. So any ideas on that one?
I wonder if when you formatted it, it must be something doesn't like about that Windows 2008 server. I just understand why it would do that, why it would not like it on that Windows. Maybe one of the listeners could come and email in and find out or give us some tips. I mean, the only thing I can think of is like, it doesn't, there's this, maybe there's a Windows update we need to run on that machine or something. Or I wonder, if we reformat it on your PC, if we could put it back into that the server and see if we could copy files to it and see if it lets us actually write files to that machine.
Well, I didn't try that, but I did plug it in, and when I went to my computer, the drive letter was there.
Yeah.
And it appeared to be fine. Mm-hmm. It was only when the backup wizard insisted that it wanted to, in fact, you couldn't carry on without it wanting to format it itself. That's when the format was lost. Mm-hmm. So, I was also thinking it's some kind of hardware issue. I don't know. I mean, it could be a hardware thing with the, it's a SATA hard drive in a USB 3 enclosure. And I'm just wondering whether the actual hardware of the server or the USB ports of the server is not seeing it right or something. I don't know.
If you've got another drive, you could just did a test backup to or something, just do like a test something or another.
I've got another drive. Well, it used to have another drive in it that was a lot smaller. and that plugged in and worked fine.
Yeah.
And the only difference with this one is A, it's a USB 3 enclosure.
Yeah.
And B, how big is it? Two terabyte hard drive.
Yeah.
They're the only significant differences. So. So if anyone's got any ideas for that, then write in.
Yeah, I don't think there's a I think there might be a 2 terabyte limit on the boot partition, but I don't think there's a 2 terabyte limit on the other one. Having it as a data drive or something.
I looked into it as well. I googled it as well, and I come up with the same answer. That it didn't matter as a data drive. Didn't matter. So, yeah. I'm a bit lost with it.
Okay, well, this is emailing with your suggestions of what to do. So, Jerry, what have you been up to?
Doing a bit of work with virtualization at work, which has been fun because it's the first time either I or my employer has really looked at it. Being Linux centric, we're looking at the Linux options. Now, I know it's sort of quite well established with VMware, and a lot of Windows people are quite comfortable with VMware, but I think the thing with VMware is it gives you everything that you need, whereas the way we're looking at doing it is using technologies like KVM to achieve that, and there doesn't seem to be any sort of best practice way of doing it. So I've been looking at all that. Maybe you guys can give me some advice. just at the moment we're just looking at simply. I know Al, you were talking about this a few weeks ago about backing up virtual machines. And the reason we're looking at this is one of the problems we had was that. The file system on which the virtual machine was running became corrupted. Luckily we had a copy of the sort of the file that made up the virtual machine, so mm-hmm. we're all right. But we're just looking at ways of backing these things up and also snapshotting, which I know is a different kettle of fish, really, but... Just sort of working our way around all those things, and also trying to do sort of in a high availability way as well. But it's lots of different things that have quite a potential of going wrong. We don't properly understand, so yeah, it's interesting, but it's all new. That's mainly what's been filling my head in the time since the last show.
Well, you pay your money for a VMware. That's a good thing. It's a really good product, and it just works, and it does everything you want to do. Mm. I mean, you can run Windows machines, Linux machines on VMware. With the KVM, can you run Windows machines on top of it or not? Is it just Linux machines you can run on it?
I don't know. KVM stands for Kernel Virtualization Module, which makes me think it would just be Linux specific. But I've always been interested in this because at home I run Linux, obviously. Both my desktop machines are Linux. And I've got a Windows VM on there because the only reason I have that is because I've got some software that is Windows that I need to run on it. So I've always been interested in that side of virtualization. But as far as I know, KVM doesn't, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Well, maybe you should do a show, because I've been doing quite a lot of virtualization stuff for the last couple of weeks regarding upgrading customers, got running 4.1 to version 5, which has got about 8 hosts and about 300 VMs on it.
So
be quiet.
So sort of upgrading the bare metal.
Yeah, it's a quite good topic to talk. So have you got shared storage between hosts then or not?
Well, kind of. With Linux, there's a thing called DRBD, which basically gives you a volume which is shared between two machines. right. and updated as and when. But I think it's set to run in active passive mode by default. So okay. you have your machine that's got the VMs on it is running that volume in active mode.
Yeah.
And then when it fails over, the passive mode bit on the other machine takes over and the VMs run on that machine.
But, so you're basically just running just a bunch of disks basically in each machine.
Yeah.
And then it just.
Yeah, well.
Whereas I do a lot today is there's things called storage area networks
yeah.
where it's a box with a load of disks in it.
Yeah.
And either connected by fiber or iSCSI.
Yeah.
And, but they are expensive and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the SANs at work, but we haven't got. The way they work is you've got a machine in there which is NFS, which shares the, and that's the shared storage, but that has its problems as well. You know, it's going over yeah. the network, you've got latency issues and things like that. So it's not, you don't really want to run VMs on there.
No.
So yeah, I mean, shared storage, I looked at briefly, but I could never get it working. And no. we haven't had a situation where we plugged several servers into one SAN yet. It's all just two servers for high availability. So,
okay. Well, I'm definitely happy. I'd like to know about more about your KVM experience. Is something yeah. I looked at. Is that what like OpenStack uses and stuff? Because I really like to know about OpenStack and stuff as well. Or is OpenStack I'm thinking about?
OpenStack is like the frame. It's like a sort of virtualization framework, open source. But I think if I'm correct, it can run multiple hypervisors. So you've got in Linux, you've got KVM, and there's another one called Xen, which I think Amazon runs on. So all the EC2 stuff runs on Xen. So I think the goal of it is to run all these different open source hypervisors and sort of give you a framework. So you have things that do storage, things that do the actual keeping track of where the machines are, failover, and things like that. I think that's what OpenStack does. But I read a document on it, and this was just quite a high level thing, and it's really complicated. So maybe I'll get to that at some point, but not right now.
Good. Okay, well, I've been dealing with. I remember a couple of weeks ago, I was telling you about a issue at Office 365 where there's a limit that it can only do 25 megabytes worth of the storage attachments to it. And one of the customers said, "Well, I want to know what these emails are so that I can export them." So I did a bit of googling. There's a utility called X Folder Exporter, which basically does you connect to Exchange Server. And it basically goes through and you can run a report and it will basically go and export all this information for you and it will basically just tell you who's got the largest item in everyone's mailboxes. So you can then pull that back and then this article and it will obviously then you can go to each of those users and then you can do another report inside of Outlook, which basically tells you what the size of the image to find the size of which of those objects are over 25 meg, so that the user can export them if they want to keep them. If they don't want to copy them across to the Office 365, or they can't copy them to Office 365, but they wanted to save them. So yeah, and also I had an issue this week with my VPN client back into work, is that it wouldn't kind of the adapter, you click on a little icon, a little padlock, and it will basically say connect to the office, but it wouldn't appear. But apparently I've had a problem where I think it's because I've had dual screens on it and then I've only gone to one screen and you just can't see the windows. So a little tip, if you press the alt and tab key until you see it, until you select this VPN program, and if you tick the Windows key and hit the right arrow key, it will maximise that window into your screen.
Yeah.
So it's just odd that, I don't know why, that my machine decided that it wouldn't display it. It's like it got hidden somewhere, basically.
Off screen. I found
off screen.
I know another one like that. If you do Alt and Space, that brings up the little left-hand corner menu. And if you do M then and an arrow key, it will move the window with the arrow key. So usually it kind of makes its way in from one side of the screen or the other when I've done that. So.
Yeah. So the other thing I've been doing this week is about AD migrations and looking at decommissions and all domain calls. But for some reason, this company had they had group policy objects, which were deploying applications. With a group policy, you can deploy applications. But the problem is if you remove a group policy, it kind of removes the application from the PC. So if we did remove this, group policy, it would remove the application from all the PCs. The problem is that in the group policy, you basically tell it where the software, the MSI file is, and they put it on the DC. It's like backslash DC01 / acrobatreader.msi or whatever. And obviously, we were decommissioning DC01, and it means everyone has got loads of group policies. But apparently, you can use ADSL edit to go in there and edit that file, edit that group policy, because there's no way you get to go into group policy. Into the group policy management console and go in there and edit it. There's no way because it's just like blanked out, but you apparently can edit it through ADSI edit. So, and interesting as well, there's a blog post I found the other day about what is the impact of upgrading domain or forest functional levels. You might remember me talking about this before, where you can upgrade level like from like 2003 level to 2008, like where it gives you things like recycle bin. For AD, and there's less like a document there which this is a document tells you, it's quite good about reading it, tells you what happens when you do an upgrade basically on the function level and why you shouldn't really be scared about it. There's nothing much breaks. This is why I was doing it, because I was trying to work it out. So you just got to make sure that all your applications are compatible with this functionality level. Like, there's issues like with, I know, like certain wireless controllers, if you get up to 2008 R2, they break. And also, apparently, there's an issue with .NET .3.5 or earlier. If it uses AD integration, then it will fail after you've gone up to 2008 R2. There's a fix for that. But if you go to that link in the show notes, I'll put it in. So that's basically what I've been up to the last kind of week. Oh, there's like a Linux tool, which I found in which I was talking to Jerry about, which is you can check the DNS propagation of all the
basically if you change the DNS record for a server. I find myself doing it a fair amount for people. If you migrating from one server to another, change takes time to propagate around the world, around the DNS system. This utility will look at lots of different DNS servers to see how far it's propagated. Mm-hmm. So
it's a Linux tool. It's quite good because it goes to about like 200 servers to check if it's been propagated or not.
Yeah.
Why does it take so long to propagate?
DNS
is it just like updating the records, is it?
Yeah.
Is it updating all yeah.
DNS records will be if a DNS server, like say you've got a DNS server at abc.com and it gets a request for host.bcd.com, it's not authoritative for bcd.com, so it goes to that other. Well, it goes to find out who is authoritative for bcd.com and then asks them for the IP address of host.bcd.com. That has what's called a TTL, time to live. And that is why DNS records take time to propagate, because these TTLs have to expire. When it's asked to resolve a name or an IP, it will then go off again to find the answer to it. So yeah, TTLs basically, time to live.
Yeah, so TTL is the time to live. So most default TTL is 24 hours. So your your DNS, local DNS server, okay, right, I'll go in and get all the IP address of host.bcd.com, and it will store it for 24 hours before it will go off and check it. So, but you can lower that to quite low, but obviously that obviously will put a lot more load on your both DNS servers, because every time you request that web page, it will go back to both those DNS to get it. And then some DNS servers are a bit naughty and cache longer than what the TTL is. So that's why it can take up to 24 to 48 hours for it to happen.
Is that like the same timeout that you have on a router? For the DHCP on a router?
Generally, it's 86,400 seconds, isn't it?
So. Yeah. So, if you're watching the live stream, which I don't know if anyone is, but we all have got our Abnabn t-shirts on.
Yeah.
Yay.
No one can see it because we're all sitting down.
We've got our lower thirds. Look. Okay.
Yeah. There we are. So, we were going to have a competition to win one, but we still haven't really decided how. We want to do it so we want people to promote the site, basically, to get us out there, so get more people listening to us.
The site, and the podcast, of course.
Yeah, the podcast mainly. So what we're thinking of doing is that we're going to create a Facebook page and a Twitter page over the Christmas period, and then we were going to post and do some sort of post and get whoever shares it the most will win a t-shirt. So
alternatively, the first person to send us £1 million will also win the t-shirt.
Well, it's not an alternative, Liam. I think we can manage both in that case. If someone wants to send us £1 million, then
they're only free in the world at the moment. They are handmade by my wife. So if anybody wants one and can't wait for the competition, if you email me, I'm sure we can sort of price that, and we'll send you one.
There's less t-shirts less of these t-shirts in the world than there is gold. So there's more gold than these t-shirts, so they're pretty rare.
So we're going to do a bit of a special thing tonight about talking about podcasts, because it's our Christmas special, and how we got into podcasts and what got us into listening to podcasts. And then we were going to each of us do a little bit about how we got in. Well, I think we should just go through the techie podcast first, which we think we do for our jobs, and then for what relates to podcasts. Then we'll each of us kind of do our own little bit, and then say how we got into podcasts and what our other podcasts are, rather than the podcasts. What are our podcasts rather than techie ones, kind of thing. So find something interesting. So. These are in no kind of order. So we've got the Security Now, which is like a weekly show, isn't it, Jerry?
Yeah, yeah.
If I say people's names wrong, I'm not very good at reading names out. So is it Steve Gibson who?
It is. Yeah, it's one of the oldest podcasts as well. Apparently, him and Leo Laporte have been doing it on the Twit Network for. 10 years, something like that. But yeah, he will basically explain to the nth degree anything and everything about security, and also his hard drive recovery tool Spinrite
and his squirrel thing at the moment as well.
Yeah That sounds interesting though. It's kind of encryption for everyone, isn't it, kind of thing.
It's a really good show, but you have to really concentrate when he goes off one. If I stop listening to the podcast and then come back to it later, like if I get to work or something, then I'm completely lost.
Yeah. I mean, it's one that, you have to devote a lot of time to, but it's worth it. It is worth it. It's like, carving something out of wood. It demands that level of concentration, but you can get really good results.
And they always have good show notes as well.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then we've got the Mike Tech Show. It's it's one that gets put onto my top of list. It's all about a guy, Mike Smith. He's an IT consultant. He does kind of work for small businesses and home users or whatever. But he's got a really good presenting voice, and the questions he gets asked always quite good. And I just really enjoy listening to it.
That's it, and that's through that one that you sent him an email, didn't you? And I listened to it.
Yeah.
So it's because of Mike reading that email out that this podcast exists. So, it's one of my favourite ones as well, definitely.
I mean, it's not really techie like servers and stuff, but it's just good to know about different PCs. Just the way he presents it, it's really well. So, Podnuts Daily we've got on the next list. It's like is a weekly call-in show presented by Jeff Halish, who kind of they just talk about computer tech stuff, computer repair businesses, which is quite good.
That's it. That's much more, as the name suggests, more of a day-to-day computer shop running, mainly about, you know, home computers, I suppose most people have, on the people bringing them into their workshops to get fixed in there. And they're just talking about the daily routines and the daily problems that they have and the daily methods that they have. I was on Podnuts Daily once. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what episode it was on. And it was a couple of months ago, I think.
Yeah, then we've got Geeksters, which me and Andy were on, which is a really good podcast. It's basically got Martin, Mitch and Tim, and they just talk about geeky stuff and anything geeky computer-wise. And obviously, Martin runs his own IT consultancy company, so that's always quite good. And then Tim's laugh is so funny as well. So
Tim's great. That's it. There's a bit of everything in that podcast, isn't there? You know, it's not just about computers either. You know, it's about. I mean, the field of tech is so vast, isn't it? So they talk about all sorts of stuff. That's definitely worth listening to. It's a bit laid back as well, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I like. I like the podcast where there's people just chatting. It's quite good. Like
just
our show, really.
Just chatting about whatever. A lot of funny stuff happens as well. Quite a bit of laughing. So it is one of my favourites as well, yeah.
We've got My Hard Drive Died. It's quite a good one. It's got Scott Moulton on it. And it basically just talk about hard drive recovery. It's a really good show. That guy knows his stuff.
Oh, it definitely does. Yeah, it really, really does. I mean, that show was on for quite a while, wasn't it? And then it stopped for at least a year or so, and it started up quite recently. Didn't you say there's been three kind of recent ones?
Yeah, there was one talking about RAID. This week was about Microsoft Macintosh or Apple's file system. And I think the first one was just like a recap one, and it's really good. And the guy, apparently, when he first started, people were moaning from the kind of the recovery business, saying, "Look, you're giving all our secrets away." Then I've got one that's called Runners Radio. It's really good. It's like a weekly thing. It's called Richard Campbell does it, and it basically does all Microsoft tech stuff. So he talks about SQL Server, Group Policy, Active Directory, and they get like MPPs on every week, and. And it's a really good show. It's only a little half an hour show, so it's never too long. And they're really good shows. And we've got TechSnap, which I really like. I don't know if I really like the guy who presents it, Chris, but I really like the guy, Alan Jude, who presents it with him. He knows his stuff about BSD. BSD? Yeah, BSD. And all that kind of thing. He knows the security inside out. He's always got something good to tell you about it. I mean, if I had more time in the world, I think I'd definitely want to learn BSD. I think it's quite a good platform. So you just need to get your head around it, isn't it, Jerry?
Apparently so. Yeah, I haven't got around to BSD yet. A friend of mine was trying to encourage me, but he said I should put it on my laptop, but I'm not sure about that. I think I might want something a bit easier to use. And problem with BSD is a lot of it has a lot of the open source packages, but a lot of them are quite out of date.
Right.
So, but it has this kind of a different way of doing things. So, yeah, it's definitely on my list, but at the moment I just haven't got time.
But it's definitely a good show. And they have like a call-in. They have a thing in every week where people write in and then they answer your questions. They normally ignore it, but Linux-y stuff, so that's quite good.
I mean, they had...
And we've got Tech...
Sorry, I was just going to mention on TechSnap. I was listening to an episode the other day and they started talking about like a ATM scam. And I thought, I really don't want to fast... Because I hate fast-forwarding through podcasts. I like to listen to the whole thing, but the whole thing is about 2 hours long. So I gave it a miss at that point. Maybe I'll go back and listen to it later.
Yeah, it's good. I don't remember what the ATM scanner was about. I think they managed to kind of put something in between the USB reader and the actual device, so that before it actually got to the machine. So.
Yeah.
The text bets the next thing is Mike and... Is it Carrie Holzman? It's Mike Smith and the Carrie Holzman, I think, isn't it?
Carrie Holzman, Carrie. Yeah.
And, they just basically talk about more of the computer side of business thing, isn't it, really?
Yeah, they do. I mean, they talk about the problems and there's different software to use, a lot more about home machines. And they talk about how to, you know, run your business and how to deal with customers, and how to deal with good customers, how to deal with bad customers, and things like that. People write in as well. Answer questions, and that's a little bit more, you know, just two people talking about something as well. So I've liked that one for a long time as well, so that's pretty good.
You know, I've got call that girl, and she does a thing called Office 365 podcast where she does remote support, and she basically just talks about that show, about what her daily things are, really. So quite a good little podcast. The other one is UC Architects podcast, which is basically a load of MVP, basically Microsoft valued or something like that, Microsoft valued part or professionals. And now basically you only can get that by being selected by Microsoft. You have to be contributing lots of things to like tech sites and stuff. And they basically just have a show where they talk about Exchange and Link online. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. Then we've got DevOps Mastery. Mastery is basically like, it's all about DevOps. If you don't know what DevOps is, it's kind of like getting the people who do the development of a website or application and the people who do all the operations side of things, like looking after the servers, getting together and working together. And that podcast is just basically about how you do that. So it's the latest buzzword, isn't it, I think?
I mean, first it was cloud, and then now it's DevOps. And, you know, no one really knows has a clear idea of what... Well, everyone has their own idea of what they mean, but no one agrees, I think. I saw a talk a little while back where someone thought... I thought this brilliant thing. It amalgamates the operations world and the development world. I'm going to call it Ops Development. That was his thing. Maybe we should all call it Ops Development instead of DevOps.
I mean, there's a couple of shows out which we haven't had much. We got like the Server Show, which I was on a couple of months ago, and we haven't had any lately of them. And so I'm hoping some people come in and do it. I mean, I'd like to do a show on there again, but the problem is obviously it's getting the time with America is the problem.
There's a lot of American podcasts as well. I mean, a lot of the ones I listen to are American. There's obviously a lot of people with a lot of things to say.
Yeah. And then we've got the one with like which is basically Podlots Pro. It's basically a bit like our show where there's like just two computer tech who talk about servers. But that's kind of died a death at the moment. That's kind of not anything at the moment. So that's kind of our list of shows of our computer techie shows. The other one we want to talk about is that. Do you want to talk about the Linux ones? We kind of all put them in a spreadsheet, and then we said.
We got the one that me and Al listened to at least, Linux Outlaws. Not much longer for this world now, but yeah, that's Dan and Fab. It used to be weekly, but. They haven't been able to do that lately, and they're ending. They've got two more left to broadcast, I think, or two more left to release as a podcast. And apparently they've done their last live show, because they do a live show every week as well, which I missed, which I'm really quite upset about, because I always meant to get round to watching a live show, but never did. So
you can still watch them, they're all on YouTube.
So Linux Outlaws, if you haven't listened to it already, it's worth it. Sort of opinionated, well, one of the hosts, Fab, is quite opinionated, the other one, Dan, is more laid back, and yeah, they make a good sort of buddy pairing. I think be sad to see them go, but apparently they're not going, they're just doing other stuff, so
yeah, and hopefully they come back with another podcast. But they are just kind of when I was looking for the next podcast, I found him, and I couldn't get on with it the first time. I had to listen to it a couple of times, and I really got into the hang of it. It wasn't actually a podcast about Linux.
Mm.
It was just two guys chatting vaguely about Linux.
Yeah. And it's just funny, you know, there's a lot of humour there, so I always find that quite refreshing. And then we've got Linux Luddites. Now, that's only been around for about a year, and it's... I wouldn't say they are Luddites, to be honest, because they try lots of new stuff. I think the tagline is the show where we try all new stuff and then decide we like the old stuff better. But at least they're trying the new stuff, you know. So they can't be that much of Luddites. I think the original Luddites went and smashed machines, didn't they? Because it was taking their jobs. I think it was weaving looms as well. And interestingly... weaving looms were the first things to use punch cards, and that's how they made their way into computers. So. Okay.
And we have met them at OddCamp.
Yeah. We talked to, Paddy, Joe and Jesse, who are the three Linux Luddites, or the three that we know of anyway. had a good chat with them, didn't we?
Yeah, it's really good. Yeah, I really like the show. It's quite good. They kind of just chat and stuff, and I think there's a lot of production behind the back of it too. Yeah. I'm guessing. I think they do, like we do a hangout and then kind of cut it all up together, whereas we kind of just push it straight out. Kind of thing.
Yeah, but, I mean, they never seem to talk over each other, and it seems quite sort of scripted. I always thought it was scripted, but apparently it's not. But it's all very well produced. I think Joe Ressington is. You know, audio, big audio guy, so that's probably why. then we've got Ubuntu UK podcast, UUPC, which is exactly what it says on the tin, really. They sort of do Linux news, Ubuntu with Ubuntu related, which is, that's always good fun. They were actually how I heard of Linux Outlaws, because I was listening to Ubuntu UK at OddCamp, one of the OddCamps, and Dan and Fab were on the panel, so that's how I heard about Linux Outlaws and got into Linux Outlaws. So yeah, Linux Voice is a podcast by the magazine, or the members, the staff of the magazine of the same name, and they were Linux Format until recently. And a load of them left.
Until they quit or something.
Yeah, and started their own sort of independent magazine. We saw them at Old Camp, didn't we? We had a stand there, and they're on the panel. They do a pretty good podcast. It's a bit sort of rough around the edges. It's done all in one sitting, I think, when they're mostly all in the same room. But it's quite...
And they have a magazine which is you can pay for, but after 9 months or something, it comes Creative Commons or something?
Yeah, so they've released it as a PDF. And they've also got... I think they've got volunteers to read out the articles as well.
Yeah.
For access...
I see the first ones come out on PDF as well.
I should read that, actually. I just couldn't bring myself to hand over a fiver to buy it. I know I should have done, but, you know... money's tight.
I don't subscribe to it. I just find I haven't got time to read a magazine unless I'm on holiday or something.
I would rather have the PDF.
It's
just a bonus that it's free after 9 months. Okay, so and then we've got bad voltage. Now this is three people: John O'Bacon, Stuart Langridge. Four people: Jeremy Garcia and Brian Lunduke, who I never heard of before.
He was the guy. He started off the people, the Juniper Networking or Juniper Broadcasting. Him and the guy Chris, they are the two guys who started off like the first Linux show. So,
yeah. And that's, again, I mean, they're all quite a, sort of loud and opinionated, and they've got their opinions about these things. And but it's good to have a podcast like that. It's well produced as well, because I think, John O'Bacon is an audio guy, so he's quite, you know, that shows in the production of the podcast. But it's... having a sort of podcast like that where people talk about these issues, and it could be anything from like Ubuntu, how Ubuntu releasing their software, and or other sort of things, sort of free culture, open source type things. Useful, interesting stuff, really.
Yeah, but they're really good. They've all got really good voices, haven't they? That Stuart Langridge, whatever, I can never say the name right, Stuart guy.
Yeah.
He's got a really good voice to be on the radio, hasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, good radio voice. And
I stood behind him in the bar, and I was like behind him in the odd camp, and I heard his voice, and I'm going, what?
It's quite funny on Twitter as well, Stuart Langridge. He said something like, Christ on a one-wheeled effing bicycle. Don't know if we're allowed to swear on the podcast.
No.
It's clean. Keep it clean, guys.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So, and then we've got Linux for the rest of us. I don't know if you listened to that before.
I haven't, no.
It's another Podnets network, and it's basically got on Door to Door Geek on there, and Cody Cooper, another guy who basically got me into Linux. So, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about how we got into podcasts. Well, also, it kind of relates it, and it's the rest of us podcast. So the reason I got into podcasts is because I did have an hour's drive to work each day. And I was listening to the Chris Moore show there on the way there. And then he stopped. And I was in Chris Moore's for like 7 years or whatever. And it was just like, I felt like I was in the... Whenever I listened to him, it was like you wake up with him, and like it's like you're in the pub with him, kind of thing. Mm. I know some people get annoyed with him or whatever, but I quite enjoyed it. And it was like when he left, I couldn't find any other radio stations to replace it. And I don't mind listening to music in the car, but I like to kind of have something to pass away. And at the time, I was thinking, is there something I can do? And actually, I'm a kind of an outdoor-y person outside of computers. And there's a fun podcast in one of the scouting magazines called The Urban Bushcraft. And it's basically two scout leaders who talk about bushcraft. And they do a podcast. And I listened to one of the episodes, and it was like an hour. And then I just started listening to the back catalogue of those shows. And then I go, well... And then I found out, well, what happens after you listen to 15 of them? When do these new shows come out, kind of thing? And I have to wait like a month or so, because they did it once a month. And I thought, well, I might as well start looking around for other things. And at the time, I had to start looking over CentOS servers. And I was like, I've always wanted like to be into Linux and stuff, but I never had got the kind of the guts to get into it and stuff, because I was always a bit worried that it's just like, if something new and it's not something you haven't got exposure to, you're always a bit frightened of looking at. So and I found this podcast Linux for the Rest of Us, and it was Door to Door Geek. He kind of really got me into Linux and kind of said, yeah, it's fine, it's safe, just if you break it, just fix it, kind of thing. And he's helped me out a couple of times in the past with issues. So from there, I kind of then got Linux for the Rest of Us, then started searching for computer ones. Then when you start listening to podcasts, people kind of start recommending other podcasts for you to listen to. And that's when I kind of like started searching for other podcasts, and then I couldn't find the one I wanted. Like, and this is why then I started doing the Appin podcast, really. So that's how I kind of got into listening to podcasts. I mean, the other two podcasts I'm going to recommend people listen to is what I like. It's a thing called Nightwise. It's basically, I think it's tagline or something, something like the for cross platform geeks, he basically does sliders. So if you use Linux, Windows, and Mac, he basically just tells you how to slide between the three of them. He's been quite quiet the last couple of months, but I think he's just changed his job. He's changed his own IT consultancy company, and he hasn't had time. But he'll tell you different things like how to set up a FTP server, Apache server kind of thing, a Tor network, and different things. And it's a really good little podcast to listen to. He's got good voices. They're very good produced as well.
What's that one? The other one I really like. One called again?
Nightwise.
Okay.
The Nightwise.
It's Nightwise. Podcast. Hacks, nice. Tips, and tweaks for cross-platform geeks.
Really? See.
Nice. And it's very interesting, especially the sliding bit. I thought that was really interesting. You know, and if you're using virtual machines and you've got two or three monitors on, you know, on your system, then you can literally slide from one to the other. I thought that was really, when I listened to some of them, I thought they were really interesting.
Was it?
And the other one I listened to is called Still Untitled with Adam Savage. I love MythBusters, and I love that Adam Savage guy. And he's just basically a weekly podcast where he talks about half an hour about, they talk about books, films, tools, and things like that. And there's prop making and MythBusters. And there's actually a site which is from called tested.com. And there's loads of YouTube videos on there. And they do like day builds and like making props and... that shows you his workshop, and it's just really cool kind of a podcast. So check that out. So it's quite a good little podcast.
Yeah, I was listening to Star Talk Radio, one of my podcasts, one of the ones on my list, with Neil deGrasse Tyson, and he had the MythBusters on there talking about their crazy goings-on.
So who's going up next? Who wants to talk next about their podcast?
Okay, I can. I mean, once upon a time, as we all did, I didn't have a clue what the hell a password, what the hell a podcast was. And it must have been on, it was on my first, what you'd call smartphone. And as you do, you're playing about with it. And I came across a section which said about podcasts, and I thought, well, what the hell's a podcast? When I started looking into it a bit more, there just seemed to be a list of shows from some sort of directory that they had on there, and most of the stuff I was like, you know, completely not interested in, most of the things on the list. So I kind of gave up on it, really, and I went back to it a while later, and because I just thought, in the meantime, I thought, wonder if there's anything to do with computers. I thought, surely somebody does something to do with computers. But when I started looking on the list, I couldn't find anything. And then I just happened to stumble across one, which happened to be called Podnuts. And so that was really the first one that I ever found. And I was absolutely absolutely amazed at the time that I downloaded a couple of the Podnuts Daily episodes. And there was people on there talking about exactly what... I was doing, you know, and the same, they were talking about problems that I was having, you know, coming up solutions that I was looking for. So I was just taken in by it at that point. So I started to download the back catalogue of Podnuts. And then, of course, as you said before, you know, when you listen to one, then they normally, like we are today, recommend other ones. So you hear about them and then you add them onto the list, and there we go. And then, but I mean, Podnuts was the starting off point for me to really, you know, get a list going, and then I found out more from there. But yeah, it was all due to my first smartphone that I had, and I just started messing about with it, and that's when I come up with, but. Most of the ones that you've mentioned, I listen to as well. There's probably a couple. Actually, there's a couple that that I listen to that you haven't mentioned yet. So, one of them's another one which is on Podnuts, which is Android App Addicts. I think they're still on a daily show, just talking about different applications you can download onto your Android. phone or tablet, and you know, different ways you can maintain it and system stuff like that. So that one can be quite good. I think they're daily now. The shows aren't very long, but they are daily at the minute, I think. The server show. Oh, you mentioned the server show, didn't you? And another one that I listen to as well is called Your Friendly Neighborhood Computer Guy. And he talks a bit more. He talks probably more about the business running of a small computer repair company. Things you should be looking out for, advertising, how to deal with customers, getting systems set up and stuff like that. So they're the ones, and there's quite a few that you've mentioned as well that I listen to as well. They're the tech ones that I listen to. As you say, we have other interests as well, don't we, apart from just computers. So I do listen to some other podcasts as well. I'll go through them now if you want.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay. One thing that I've certainly learnt a lot from listening to podcasts is different astronomy and astrophysics and physics in general. And I've tried to learn a lot of these things from books, and I just find it very difficult to learn things from books sometimes. I don't know if the way it's described or way of visualizing it, I don't know what it is, but I've always been better sort of watching or listening. So a couple of them that I listen to, this one's based in the UK. It's actually based by Manchester, a place called Macclesfield. There's a big radio telescope there called Jodrell Bank. It's called the Lovell Telescope. It's possibly one of the most famous telescopes in the world, I'd imagine.
It used to be the biggest radio telescope, biggest steerable radio telescope in the world, didn't it?
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's still in use today. And what was his name? Lovell? I can't remember his first name. Henry Lovell, was it, or something?
Jim Lovell? No. No, Jim Lovell was the commander of Apollo 13.
Oh, yeah. it's called the Lovell Telescope anyway, but this podcast is just about, I think it's some of the students that are doing it at Manchester University, sort of while they're there, some of them volunteer and go onto this podcast called the Jodcast. They have an episode every month, sometimes twice a month, and they talk to different people in the field of astronomy and physics and stuff like that, and talk to them about different things that they're doing and different things that have been found. So that's pretty good. Another sort of astronomy one is called Astronomy Cast. Now, this is based, one of the guys is in Canada, I think, and then the woman that does it, well, she goes all over the place, but they have different topics on each episode. I've learnt a lot from that one, to be honest. You know, a lot more about. I could never get the grips with things like Einstein's theory of relativity. I could never kind of grasp the whole concept in my head about it. But after listening to those podcasts, it's kind of clicked. You know what it means. So just by listening to it instead of reading it from a book, it's just, you know, made me understand it so much. Yeah.
It's often a better way to learn things, I find, rather than reading from a book, watching them on the telly or listening to them. Yeah, so just kind of by osmosis, it goes in.
That's it. And another one is this is a BBC podcast called The Infinite Monkey Cage. And if anyone's seen Professor Brian Cox, he does some TV shows about space and the universe and stuff like that. He's on it. That's much more of a comedy show. It's like a panel show, but that's interesting and quite funny as well.
It's like it's either a science show with a comedy angle or a comedy show with a science angle.
I don't know which one it is. The Infinite Monkey Cage. Do you know he was in a band when he was younger?
Yeah.
I can't remember what band he was in.
Oh. D-Ream.
D-Ream, that's it. Yeah, he was a keyboard player. So that's a BBC, but it hasn't been on for a while, but I think it's on It's on annually, isn't it? Or it's on during the summer, I think, or something.
Or twice a year or something. Yeah. I've been listening to it for a while.
Yeah. And then another one I listen to is all to do with Star Trek. And how geeky can you get to be into Star Trek? Well, this one's called The Lou Trek Show. And basically in that one, every episode has talked about an episode of Star Trek. So they're the most of the ones that I listen to. And that's how I got into podcasting in the first place. And now we're doing one. So
So I'll go next then. So I got into podcasts similar to Al. It was a commute that got me into podcasts. Because I used to have an hour and a half each way, and what I used to do is watch American TV shows. They tend to be about three quarters of an hour long, so that left a bit of time, and I started listening to podcasts when that finished, because there wasn't quite enough time for two. So, and originally I had a third generation iPod, which I was listening to these things on, as one of those ones that contained a spinning hard drive. It wasn't actually that long ago. I just had an old iPod, I think.
They're really expensive now. You need to keep them because they don't sell them anymore. They're going really expensive on eBay, apparently.
Oh, man, I think I chucked it away. Damn. but, yeah, that was a bit of a pain because you had to use it through iTunes, and you had to download the podcast on iTunes and then sync them to the iPod, which got a bit annoying, really. And then I got an iPod Touch, and you still had to do that. But then I thought, there must be a better way of doing this. It's an iPod Touch. It's, you know, touch sensitive and all this. And there was a podcast app called Downcast on iOS. And that was when I really started sort of going out, finding other podcasts and listening to them. Or not listening to them, because a lot of them just sat there on the iPod not being listened to and taking up space. That was really how I got into it. I got into sciencey sort of podcasts first, and then sort of picked up a few of the techie ones along the way, mainly the Linux ones. The Twit Network, I sort of discovered the Twit Network, found they had loads of techie shows on them, listened to a few of those. I listened to Windows Weekly for quite a long time because I just liked the sort of banter on there, really, between Leo and Paul Theroux. I just found them quite amusing. But that's kind of gone out of my sort of weekly rotation now. So I love podcasts because when you're sitting there on the train or whatever, you can learn things and you can you download the ones you're interested in, and you can listen to them whenever you like. So and you can do it offline, you know, if your phone, you know, isn't connected to the network, you can still listen to a podcast. So that's what I like about them.
Yeah, I mean, the podcast, I think, a very valuable time kind of thing. I like it to be like it's that's why I whittle them down to the ones I like. I mean, there's like a couple of shows like the from the Juniper Network, like I can't think what they're called now, but it's just they either too long or they've got too many adverts in it, kind of thing. And it's just it's just
too much.
The time is valuable.
Too much of an effort to listen to it sometimes. Even if the content's good, it can be just too much of an effort sometimes, I find.
Yeah, the one we haven't mentioned about is the I can't think what it's called now. I was coming to my brain and gone again. The HPR, Hackett Public Radio.
Oh yeah,
where people can just anyone can put a show in. I mean, they haven't been very good lately. They've been good, But I mean, there's been some good ones in the past. Like there's a guy talking about batteries and what how people have in their bags and what people would do for jobs. They're really good. So you just keep having to listing through them to see to get the good ones. Really,
yeah, yeah. There should be some kind of rating system, I think, because it says specifically on the website it doesn't really matter about audio quality, but I think that's quite important. If you're going to listen to a podcast, it needs to sound good, doesn't it? Because it's an audio format, it's an audio medium, yeah. So it needs to sound good. And you should make at least some effort to doing that, you know. But yeah, so it's very democratic in that everyone gets a show. So
what are your podcasts you listen to other than the Linuxy and techie ones?
I have got quite a laundry list. I want to mention Floss Weekly because I've found out about a lot of open source applications and projects on there. They interview the project leader or someone, you know, some organisational person to do with. So things like I listened to one about Puppet, which got me really interested in that, and there's all sorts of other ones. Take a look at the archive. There's pretty much everything on there. I'll just go down the list. Triangulation, which is Leo Laporte talking to various people, various techie people. The last one that I listened to, he was interviewing one of the designers of the Mars Curiosity rover, which is really interesting. Radiolab, you generally get sort of three different stories around a theme per episode, but it tends to be a sort of sciencey, techie sort of theme. It's really well produced, really good. Naked Scientists, I think that runs on one of BBC regional stations. I think it's people from Cambridge University, just talking about scientists, but they're quite it's quite sort of hardcore. But it's like a sort of news show, so it's quite good in that sense. Costing the Earth is a Radio 4 show. Environmental issues, basically, quite interesting. Little Atoms is really good. Its tagline is a radio show about ideas and culture. And often those ideas are sort of sciencey based. But every now and then he's interviewing someone about their latest novel, which he's read and finds really interesting, but I don't always. So it's not bad, but it's interesting and not so interesting to me anyway. Twist, which is This Week in Science. Now this has been going for, I think, well over 10 years now. And it's basically, it used to be two people, a doctor of neuroscience, of some kind of neuroscience, and a car salesman, American. But they talk about science news stories of the last week. So that's always interesting. Good for keeping up to date. Guardian Science Weekly was the first ever podcast I listened to. So I always listen to that. Always interesting. Recycled Electrons. I've almost finished, don't worry. That's Chris Lintott, who presents the Sky at Night, and his mate, a fellow doctor or professor, and they just talk about this week's astronomy news. It tends to be every 2 to 3 weeks. So he's obviously a very busy man, Chris Lintott. The Life Scientific, where Jim Al-Khalili, you might have seen him on the telly, interviews a sort of science personality or famous scientist to talk about their life. They had the guy that was involved in the Beagle 2, the Mars lander thing, Colin Pillinger. He died recently, but there was an interesting interview with him on there. That's pretty much it. I mean, I've got a few more, but I don't want to bore all the listeners. Maybe we could put a link to the spreadsheet, the Google Sheet. I've probably gone on long enough.
No, it's good. It's always interesting. I like to listen to what other people listen to. Yeah. It's interesting. So I think we're coming to the end of the show, but we have had an email in, haven't we? I'll put it in the show notes. Do you want to read it, Andy? Or did you hear it?
I'll have to find it. Hang on. You've got it in the
Andy's been asleep in the corner.
Well, I've lost it. Where is it? Right, here we go. We did have an email from William. It says Andy and Al and now Jerry. So Jerry gets a mention.
Hey. It
says, way to go, gentlemen. This has rapidly become one of my favourite podcasts since I first heard about it on the Mike Tech Show. I really enjoy listening to the problems and solutions that you encounter. I hope the podcast can continue to reach out into the void for many years to come. Thanks for a great show. So that's from William. So I don't know where William's from, but that's a great email, so thanks.
I quite like this notion of the void that we seem to have... it sort of seems to be a sort of visual thing for our listeners, the void.
Okay, so yeah, if anyone wants to email us, they can email us at mail@adminadminpodcast.co.uk, and I think we're just about there. So happy Christmas, everyone, and then a happy new year. I'm guessing that the next show will be out in a new year.
Yeah,
at some point, I'm guessing.
Unless we're going to put out. We're going to put our best of compilation for. Might allow me to catch up on all the old shows I haven't listened to yet.
Yeah. I'm quite pleased we actually got to the 14 in so quickly timed. So it's good. Mm. So speak to you all soon, guys. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year and stuff.
Take
so,
it easy.
See you all soon.
Don't eat too many mince pies.
No. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.